thought it would be interesting, and we have the opportunity. My good friend Tiger's here, and I thought it would be a real nice opportunity to talk again a little bit about what's going on in the sky and what's happening both in the visible outer cosmos and in that inner cosmos. And I got a cosmonaut here with me tonight, Tiger Windwalker. Maybe you got a poem there, bro.
Well, hey, I just want to, again, extend my thanks to you, Tony, for continuing to invite me here.
Oh, it's great to have you.
Hopefully our continued commentaries have some meaning and cogency for the listeners out there. And hello, all listeners out there. We know we're reaching somebody tonight, and really hope that this will be a good appetizer for your evening. I always have something to read here from my book, Walking Beauty. It's going to, it's at the printers right now. It'll be out here pretty soon. But, this is a compilation of poems that I generated over 15 years time doing vision quests and, personal, you know, exploration. Never thought I would have a book, but then I looked at them all. These kind of recollections of major events in my life. And I said, well, let's do it. But I think, you know, what I'd like to do here is I'd like to read you a poem. It's called Heading There. And this poem, as many of my poems do, has the quality or expresses the quality of becoming one with. Which in astrology we would talk about our capacity to enter into our relationship with Neptune or the spirit realm, where the one source that contains all the individuals and the totality. So a lot of my poems have that quality to them. I call that the, one of the qualities of a spiritual life. And then the other thing in this poem, which is kind of cool, is that there's a certain... Not a strategy for coping with change, but it seems to kind of emerge out of just embracing a life that is a distinct option. That matter of fact, the natural world deals with change very gracefully. So let me just read this poem to you. Heading there. Today, hiking up the rugged Santa Lucias, I have arrived at a shady stream. Not yet the nearby mountaintop, although I'm heading there. After the grueling uphill, the blazing sun, and the gossiping gnats in my ear, I have stopped to rest in the coolness of the canyon. Sinking into the solitude, I'm caught in the soothing energy of the stream's murmur and splatter. Every swirl, ripple, and roil, every cascade, fall, and boil, show me the water's irrepressible signature. All of it, a melding of moods. All of it, a drama of surrendering. All of it, beyond seriousness. In every moment, the creek replaces itself, and then again and again, continuing forever on a mapless journey toward an inescapable destiny. The whirlpools keep spinning while muffled voices keep calling. The water keeps leaping and falling over, around, and down the fronts and sides of endless slippery rocks. The creek has finally shown me that I have no goals in life, save for the easy movement that takes me to a quiet place. When you finally get there, look for me at the mountaintop. I am the butterfly carried upward on the breath of the canyon breeze.
And we've got that butterfly being lifted, soaring by the canyon breeze here with us tonight in that vibe. That's a beautiful one. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, tell you what, here too. We can put those on, and then you'll hear what's going on in the background as well.
Yeah, I can modulate.
Yeah. All right. You know, one of the things that is fascinating with the sky is, first of all, watching what's actually going on. Like right now, you should be able to see close to the midheaven or a little bit toward the west. Saturn is up there, and it's right under the back end of Leo, where it is right now. So it's actually in the sign Virgo, but it's physically near the back end of Leo because there's a difference in the positions of the fixed stars and the positions of the stars from the equinoxes, the way the signs are aligned. Anyway, it's interesting to look at what's happening now and recognize that that's a resonance back to something that happened before. For instance, the pattern of where Saturn is at any moment has a resonance back to 29 and a half or about 30 years ago. And to 60 years ago. And, you know, to 30 years out beyond where we are right now. There are these connections. There's this web of interaction. And one of the connections that we have right now is one with Saturn and its alignment with Uranus. It was aligned with Uranus in an opposite fashion, meaning on opposite sides of the sky from the point of view of the Earth observer. This happened last in 1965. And it was interesting. It was April of 1965 when the first one hit. And here we are in April of 2009. It's about, 44 years later. This cycle is about 45 years or so. And when that happened, Saturn was together with Chiron, and Uranus was across the sky together with Pluto. And then there was that Pluto-Uranus conjunction that happened in 65. Now, Tiger, you were a bit older than me in 65. I was actually just about to have my fourth birthday. And I remember where I was for my fourth birthday in 1965. I was in England. It's the only birthday I've ever had abroad, as far as I remember. And it was in England. I had my fourth birthday there in England. I was there with my mom and my two brothers. Quite an adventure. And in April of 65, you were 19?
Yeah, well, I was just getting ready to do my first peace march.
Yeah?
Up in Oakland, California.
Yeah.
And that was really when it was coming really early then. So, and I remembered that it was a wonderful time because I was going to college, eventually shifted up to Berkeley, and then it really got cooking. But it was very interesting for me to see how many, well, let's say I had significant relationships with certain teachers, professors, that really helped me turn my life around and go through. The gate was open. So here, what you have with the Saturn opposition Uranus is one of the things that's going to happen with that is that people are going to question authority. Things are like they're so tightly organized and routinized and so clearly defined by ancient values that maybe have not stood the test of new upcoming generations, that there's this tension there. And with we had a whole series of things happening there, the repression from our own dark side of American history with black people. So we had civil rights, Martin Luther King, and civil rights actions going on. And then it came together with the war, the protest against the war. And then cultural things like music and you know, psychedelics and things like that. The questioning that was going on then was the most intense that I've ever seen. And the ferment and the creative spirit that was there and camaraderie was just magnificent. Well, you see, that camaraderie is the Uranian part of this whole game. Mm-hmm. That sense of community and not necessarily a traditional community, but an adventurous, exploring community, wanting, willing to make their own values paramount. Mm-hmm. See? So now we're back to that again now, and it's going to be interesting to see in this cycle how this sense of community works its way out. And I would venture to say, just as a preliminary here, as we start to frame the subject we're talking about, I would say that what was considered our togetherness was defined as community back in the 65. Now we're looking at a more planetary definition for what community means, the global village. But I really mean the length and breadth of this planet feeling into everything and everybody at a way that it's never happened before. I think the challenge here is our planetary coming of age. When we graduate from, you know, just our singular introspective self through our relations, our mother and father, and on up into, you know, school and community and country. We have gone through that whole thing in just one lifetime. We're going through that whole cycle, and we're going to end up to the point where the push and the tug against what has constrained us, the older orders, will actually catapult us out into a new definition of mankind. And I think this is a very exciting time to be alive. And I believe that we can all find ways to participate in this rebirth as it unfolds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is really striking, the connection between where that time was and how you were experiencing it and what's happening now. It's interesting, I'm noticing here, that Saturn position in 65 was very close to Chiron. Chiron had Saturn was probably about to conjoin Chiron. That's what it looks like to me, because Chiron would have likely been moving faster than Saturn. Saturn would have been moving faster than Chiron, so Saturn would have been catching up. And now we have something that's going on, which has kind of crept up on us, and you've been watching it develop. I noticed last year that Chiron and Neptune were together, and Jupiter is creeping up on Neptune and Chiron. And so there's this element of the relationship, the awareness, the inner healing, you know, that wound that we carry inside us that kind of drives our search, our interest, our desire, whatever that may be. Or maybe it's like that Chiron shape. It's a key. Maybe there's something inside us that's not necessarily just our woundedness that pushes us forward. Maybe there's also a greater dimension to our being, or maybe many of them. I think that's kind of obvious. There's something there that's drawing us on. So it's like being both pushed from behind and pulled from the front in some ways, that Chiron energy. Well, that was with us in 65 with Saturn, and now it's with us in 2009 with Neptune, and Jupiter's just about to conjoin. And I was looking at the chart of the eclipse that happened in January, and with that one, the planets are really tightly grouped, all except for, you know, the Saturn, and then Uranus is kind of close. Uranus and Venus are together. Well, anyway, it strikes me that story with Chiron and Neptune, and now with Jupiter approaching, is a pretty interesting story. And we're just about to have the conjunction of those three bodies. They're basically close enough to be considered conjunct right now. And on, May 27th, they're going to all be together. Jupiter and Neptune will be exactly conjoined at 3:16 p.m. May 27th, which is a Wednesday, a couple of weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that Chiron.
That's Jupiter
story.
And Neptune?
Jupiter, Neptune, and okay. And Chiron will actually be within a quarter of a degree.
All right. Well, you want my take on this?
Yeah.
Well, when we're talking about Chiron, there's another way of looking at it is that we have right now Neptune, Chiron, and Jupiter in the sign Aquarius. Well, and so this Aquarian energy is what I was talking about before. It has to do with, because Aquarius is an air sign, but you take that mental quality to its loftiest place, and you start envisioning yourself as part of the greatest whole that can be imagined, the greatest collective. Now, what I'm saying is we're right on the verge of redefining ourselves as a planetary race. Well, you can easily take the next jump from there.
Mm-hmm.
Insofar as we're able to handle this efficaciously and also authentically, that's going to open the portal for us to become travelers into the solar system and beyond. A very, very, it's kind of like, you know, our coming out party. And if anybody was out there sitting and waiting and just to see what's emerging, we really have to put on a good face to enter into that neighborhood, because if we come out kind of twisted and weird and you know, anxious, and also at the same time aggressive, then that won't send out a very good welcome to the neighborhood as we emerge. So this is an important time. It's like a rebirth. It's like going through the birth canal again, and we're going to emerge. And you know, imagine the baby. You know, the baby, the fetus has been sequestered and yet supported at the same time in the womb. The womb represents Saturn. So now we're talking about two different occasions of Saturn opposition Uranus, and this works either way. So there's some part of that organism wants to hold on to that seed and hold on and hold on and hold on. At some point, another part or a part of the seedling of the fetus wants to get out, you know. And actually, it's got to be in the woman's body, too. So both in the woman's body, there's the urge and the impetus to hold, and also there's the urge to expel or to give birth. And there is a chemistry that goes on because the body has been doing, the female body has been doing this for a long, long time. So these conflicting urges work their way out, and there are not a lot of stillbirths. You know, we get lot. We've got 6.8 billion people on the planet right now. So that's a really good example there of the Saturn and the Uranian energy working together, because with this opposition also means complement. So we can get the two forces to work together. For instance, I'll give you another one. A hose that delivers water from a hose bib out to your garden, that hose is a Saturn 9 structure. It contains and holds the water and directs it to a place where it can be put to good use, far away from the spigot. Now, what happens if you get too much tension on that hose? If it becomes too tight, it can collapse and then obstruct the flow of water. So a lot of these historical incidents that we've had is that we've had the government or the father figure, in a paternalistic order, wanting to squeeze down and hold out for control because that they are the appointed authority and to control the situation. Whereas there's this other restive element that is wants to assert itself and to be heard. And if the patriarchy squeezes down too hard, they stop the flow of this vital flow into society. And what happens is it basically just strangles the society. So the art of governing is to be able to apply pressure, move your hose around, no kinks, get it to the place where there's the fire or the drought and get it to do its thing, but without squeezing off the vital flow. So a good politician, Barack Obama's a good politician. He knows this. Mm-hmm. And he wants to get the flow going. Mm-hmm. He wants to keep it going. Mm-hmm. Rather than see that, become stagnant or constricted. And then things will start to die off, just like if you had a vein collapse in your body, things are going to start to die off in your body. You're going to lose nerves and stuff. Or if it's in your arm, stuff's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So, that I can understand that. But there's got to be an enlightened approach here. And I think even for Barack and a lot of these world leaders, as circumstances force us into a viewpoint of seeing ourselves as one earth, one people, then we will start to then respond by defining ourselves as, that group, that planetary community. Circumstances are going to take us there and make us look. And I think even for Barack and a lot of people, they're going to have to make a lot of movement toward expanding the perspective and the definition. If we don't, we run the risk of actually exterminating ourselves, which is another whole little thing we could look at about the dark side. That's where you bring the Chiron in. Why would you want to commit suicide? Why would you want to commit suicide? If you're using nuclear weapons or weapons of mass destruction or anything like that, or the slow poisoning of the planet, that is a form of suicide also. Why would we want to do that? So that's the function of Chiron when it shows up in the scene like this. Chiron's going to tell us, and it is in this 2000, this the eclipse of 2000 solstice, the solstice of 2009. Is that it? That's a winter one. January 25th, 2009. We're going to have what we've been just talking about. But I just wanted to let you know that those three planets that Tony talked about, alluded to earlier, Neptune, Chiron, and Jupiter, are all in the sign Aquarius. So this is where we need to look at our basic beliefs about ourselves that get in the way from us forming a healthy global community. Mm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I can come up with one right now, and I'll pass it over to you then, Tony. The first one is, where did human beings get the idea that they're sinners and that there's something deplorable and shameful and ugly about their existence? Where did that come from? And if you start to trace some those beliefs back, that you'd use a thought process and go back in your life and review your life, flip back the pages of your photo album, and you're going to see and you're going to feel memories of where people basically told you that's the way you're supposed to feel about yourself. Well, we all know personally self-destructive individuals, mm-hmm. people that don't have a very high self-esteem, you know, value themselves. And, you know, well, that happens at a societal level too, and it happens at a world level. And that's what we're having to look at right now, because what we're manifesting here, being on the brink of warfare, famine, poisoning the planet, the feedback is these issues are coming home to roost now, and we have to really look, understand, and change. We have to change the MO. We have to change the belief system that we have of ourselves as people, as individuals, and then that has to ripple all the way on up through all the institutions, right into Barack. And then Barack will probably find himself doing stuff that he didn't think he could do either. But I think that's what the process can look like at just starting at an individual level. And you got work to do. You got work to do to help us get through these times.